All right, well, that was interesting, but if you couldn't pick out what that was saying, it's KBLU 92.3 Logan, Utah. You're listening to Aggie Radio and the Armchair Champions, because we are the champions while sitting in armchairs.
We know everything, apparently.
Oh, yeah, I got you on the wrong mic.
Oh.
Technical difficulties. Once again, apparently we know everything.
Yeah. Do they not hear me?
I do now.
Oh, okay.
I turned on the wrong mic.
Okay. Well, you can go solo for the entire show if you want to.
That sounds like fun, but I'm good.
All right. So how was your weekend? Or I guess really the 2 weeks since we took a hiatus from our show for a week.
Busy, tired. Gotta go do a retreat thing, for student media. Gotta learn some stuff so that we can be better, I guess. But
Learn how to be the best sports, or I guess
I
just
wanna
media.
be the very best, like no one ever was.
I totally like binge watched Pokemon over the weekend, and so I listened to that theme song a lot over the weekend. It still gives me chills.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's too much. It's a nostalgia overload. You can't handle it. But anyway, so I guess a couple of news things. We're gonna get into the main news, like the Olympics and stuff, a little later. But first off, I just barely saw this. I'm gonna mention it to you. So Tim Tebow's going into he's gonna try Major League Baseball. That's not the newest news, but the latest thing I saw is that 20 Major League Baseball teams are going to be attending Tim Tebow's workout. And in all honesty, I don't see what they're so excited about. I mean,
right.
I'm sure he did play baseball, you know, throughout high school, and I don't know if he played in college or not. I don't think he did. He might have. I don't know. But is he really that big of a prospect that, like, two-thirds of the Major League Baseball is going to attend his workout?
Yeah, I don't get it either. I mean, yeah, he's a good athlete, but he hasn't played baseball in a while. He's not going to be to the level of competition as the guys that you have in your minor league, so
Yeah.
why? I mean, honestly, I do know why. A lot of it is really just simply a ticket sales grab. So if Tebow's name is there, like, people will, like, buy tickets for the chance to see him play baseball, because he's pretty popular, and he's a good guy, so it makes sense that he's popular. But
they just want to boost their minor league ticket sales,
or even major league.
Yeah, if he makes that far. It's kind of like Michael Jordan played baseball. Like, he didn't ever make the majors, did he? He just played minors.
No, I think he went straight over to majors.
Did he? I can't remember.
Wherever he went, he wasn't very good.
No.
I think, well, if I so from Space Jam, I think that he went, like, over to the White Sox, like their major league team. But yeah, he wasn't very good.
He struck out in
But I mean,
Space
that's what
Jam.
happens when you don't play a sport for a while and you focused on a different sport for a while. You don't have what maybe you had before.
Yeah. I mean, even Russell Wilson, I think, wasn't he drafted, like, in the early rounds by, like, the Texans or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he actually, I think it was last offseason, he went in. Went to training camp with them
Yeah.
during the NFL offseason.
Yeah, but even now, I don't think he would be really good because he's been playing football for
Yeah,
so long.
exactly. I mean, that's the thing. It's, in order to be a professional athlete of any sport, you have to be playing that sport for a while, and you have to be, you know, constantly playing it.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is, like, it seems almost disrespectful that everyone thinks that they can just go over to baseball and be a major league player. It's like, it's basically, in my mind, it's Tebow saying, you know, baseball isn't as tough as football to be good at.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously, there's different aspects of each game. Football involves more contact. You pretty sure you have to be stronger most of the time to play football, because if you don't, you're gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
With baseball, you have to have some strength in order to throw the ball really far and hit really hard. But,
Yeah, I think
like,
with
a lot of the really good guys, just, you know, they're not that big.
Yeah, with baseball, it's a lot more skill than it is athleticism. And so if you don't have that skill, you know, you're hitting a ball that's going like 90 miles an hour, or maybe more or less, and you have to hit it. And then you have to be able to throw the ball. And for Tebow, he's going to be a pitcher, I think. Did it say if he was going to be a pitcher, like an outfielder or something?
I didn't see what he was going to be, but
okay. If he's going to be a pitcher, that requires a ton of skill and a lot of endurance on your arm.
He wouldn't make it as a pitcher for sure.
Yeah, well, he couldn't throw a football because
you have to work at that. Because, like, if he went and tried to be a pitcher, he would just get everything hit off of him for home runs.
Yeah,
he'd lobbing it over the plate. It takes a lot of skill to be able to be a pitcher.
Yeah, and so that skill, you know, it hasn't been developed since perhaps high school for him. And maybe if he played in college. But yeah, it's doubtful if he'll make it very far, much farther than the ticket office.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a bit frustrating. I mean, I'm not, you know, this big, huge baseball fan or anything, but I recognize that you're not just going to be able to go from another sport over to baseball and be really good. Like, you might be athletic, and maybe after a while you could get good if you already had talent, but I think this idea that Tebow's just going to go over and play baseball and suddenly is going to be relevant, it's a joke.
Yeah.
It's disrespectful to baseball, I think.
He's probably playing his ego a little bit because he never wanted to switch positions, and he didn't want to go play Canadian football. I think he's tired of being with the SEC Network and wants to get some more exposure and continue his career, I guess. But anyway, moving on from that, just a couple of minor news stories. The Jazz, they signed their second-round pick, Joel Bolomboy, the power forward who was with Weber State. I like that they signed him because I like Joel Bolomboy, but I don't think he's really going to get a whole lot of playing time, so I guess this is why it's a minor story. I know a lot of guys that I've talked with, they really like him. But it's kind of like when Jeremy Evans was with the Jazz. You know, everybody likes him, but he's not really going to play at all.
It's because Jeremy Evans wasn't that good. I mean, he could jump high.
Yeah.
And so, by virtue of that, he could dunk. But, yeah, he didn't add much.
Yeah. And I think Bolomboy definitely has a much better chance of making the NBA than Jeremy Evans because he's bigger, he's stronger. He does kind of have a little bit of jump shot already. He's got a lot of things going for him. So he could be one of those, you know, second-round picks that makes it in the NBA. But with the Jazz right now, I mean, they've got, like, three or four power forwards that are all fighting for playing time. You got Derek Favors, Trey Lyles are trying to develop him. They signed Boris Diaw, or Diaw, however you say that.
Diaw.
Yeah. And so he's going to be playing garbage time at best. And Boris Diaw is already going to be fighting for that, you know, with Trey Lyles. They're basically going to be splitting the rest of the power 4 minutes between those two guys. So it's only when the Jazz are blowing out some random team if Bolomboy's not already in the D-League. So.
Yeah. For me, that's the thing about second-round picks is most of the time, like, it's like, do we think this guy can possibly make it? And if we think so, then yeah, okay, let's draft him. But it's very tough for someone that's a second-round pick to make it or be relevant. But it does happen. You do have some guys that step up and show that they should have been drafted earlier. You have guys like, or even some guys, they go and play overseas for a few years and then come back and they're much improved. Yeah. And
wasn't Paul Millsap a second-round pick?
I don't remember, but I wouldn't be surprised. I know that Manu Ginobili on the Spurs was a second-round pick. Yeah. They actually do a ton with their second-round picks.
Yeah. Carlos Boozer was a second-round pick, too.
Yeah, but it's Carlos Boozer.
He was at least still kind of good.
That's debatable.
Better than most second-round picks. He started for NBA teams for a while, so that's better than most. But yeah, I was kind of frustrated a little bit with the Jazz's draft strategy. Like, they drafted two point guards in the second round. Like, and it's like, okay, you've already, at that point, they'd gotten George Hill.
They already had five point guards at that point.
Yeah, and it's like, they ended up with seven or eight or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, why? Like, if you, the second round is basically where you're taking those flyers, why not take, you know, small forward, maybe a center? Because that's one area where the Jazz, when their backup center is, like, technically Derek Favors or Jeff Withey. I think that's how you say his name, but
Withey.
Just get a lisp on there.
Withey.
And so it's like, why are you taking a position where at that point you already become deep at? And so, it was a little frustrating to see him keep taking point guards and just wondering why the heck are you doing this?
Yeah, so, I mean, for me, that's the thing is, like, I think what it is not, I mean, obviously they're set at the point guard position for the time being. But if they see these guys and they think, you know, this guy might develop into something good in a few years, you know, and let's take a chance on him, because if he turns into something spectacular, then we want to have the rights to him. And also, good point guards are in high demand. And so if they do have someone that develops well, they can use them as a trade asset later. So, I mean, there's a lot of reasons to draft people. Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying about getting someone like another position that isn't as stacked. But at the same time, they're set at every position on the roster. And so really this is more about trade assets. And that's one thing that second round picks do, is they become trade assets.
Yeah. They already traded one of those point guards away.
Yeah. Trey Burke. Who, you know, Trey Burke, I liked him all right. He did a good job of scoring. He was a solid guy. His issue, though, was he could not play defense. He was too small to play effective defense against the elite point guards in the West.
Yeah.
Like Russell Westbrook. He wasn't even big enough to play defense on Steph Curry, who, I mean, you have to be really working to keep him from scoring as much as he does. But, yeah, you've got all these really athletic point guards that are bigger than Trey Burke, because Trey Burke listed him as 6 foot. That probably was generous.
Yeah.
So he was really undersized, and he did a good job scoring off the bench, but I don't think he was content with that role. And as you mentioned, like, the Jazz had a bunch of point guards, and he was going to see less and less playing time. And so they traded him for a second round pick. So basically, to me, what that means is, you know, we're not really getting anything for you. So this is more for you than for us.
Yeah.
Because they could have just cut him, and it would be essentially the same thing. Because that's how... Because they traded for a second-round pick for, like, 7 years from now. And... Or maybe it was 5. But either way, it was a ways in the future. And second-round pick. And hardly ever do you have a second-round pick that pans out. It does happen from time to time. And maybe we'll turn around and see that pick end up being... like some guy who develops into a superstar, but I doubt it. But it also depends on who it is.
Yeah.
But either way, it's basically, here, Trey Burke, we're thankful for what you've done for us. You're not really going to work out here, so we're going to give you a chance to go to somewhere else and maybe have a better shot.
Yeah, and I really do hope he succeeds, because kind of like you, I like him. I just feel like he wasn't fitting in Utah, and he didn't fill the needs, and I like Dante Exum better. So at least I think he's going to be a better player.
Yeah, well, I mean, already he's a good defender.
Yeah.
And that's huge, because, like I said, Trey Burke, not great at defending. And I don't think it's from a lack of effort. I think it's just lack of size.
Yeah, he just can't do it.
And I think, naturally, he's not as good at defense as his offense. Unfortunately, a lot of basketball players growing up, they focus on just the offense, and they don't develop on defense. Some people can get away with it, like James Harden. Because they're so good on offense that they kind of... people put up with them not playing defense, I guess. Carmelo Anthony's another example. But really, I mean, unless you're one of those elite talents that can score and score in, you know, in a hailstorm, then you've got to be able to play both ways. Yeah. And if you're not able to, then you're not worth it for... some, like, for NFL, NBA teams, I almost said NFL. You don't have to be able to play both ways for the NFL.
Nope.
You do in some high schools.
Yeah. If you're good enough, they'll make you play both ways.
Yeah.
All right. So, next, I guess, is another small bit of news. So, for Team USA, Mike Krzyzewski, he was the basketball coach for Team USA. He stepped down along with Carmelo Anthony. And now they're going to bring in Greg Popovich, which...
Yay, the crowd goes wild.
Golden 2020. Yeah, I honestly think that Greg Popovich is probably a better coach than Mike Krzyzewski to begin with.
I think so, too. I know Coach Krzyzewski is a really good coach.
Yeah, he is.
But Greg Popovich, in my mind, is definitely the best coach on the planet right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the best of all time in the NBA, maybe at least one of them.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he's able to take all these guys that were castaways from other teams, like Boris Diaw. You got tons of different examples guys that were just free agents and nobody wanted to sign them. He signs them, and then they're suddenly a relevant contributor on a, you know, a contender. And the perfect example is Boris Diaw. Boris Diaw got cut from, I think it was now the Hornets. I think they were the Bobcats at the time still. And gets cut by them, can't get a job or whatever. Spurs sign him, and he was a major factor in their championship run. And he's done stuff like that all the time. He actually has these NBA players work together. It's a novel concept.
Team basketball. Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. But I think he's a great coach, and I'm excited because he doesn't put up with your egos. And I felt like this, these Olympics, Coach Krzyzewski was almost checked out for some of these games, like, he was just letting them do whatever they wanted to do. And even though, you know, Popovich is pretty old, like, he's not going to put up with that.
No, he's not. He's a cranky old man.
And so I look forward to seeing our team not have close games against teams like Serbia.
Yeah.
And Australia and France.
Just have them actually blow them out properly like we should be.
Yeah, like we did in the gold medal game.
Yeah.
I think Coach K finally decided, okay, well, I guess I better make sure that you guys don't lose and embarrass U.S. basketball on the Olympic level. I mean, because can you imagine if we lost to Serbia? Serbia.
That's just, I don't know. You have to win the gold medal. Like, the United States is the premier of, I don't know if that's the right word, but the premier of basketball. This is where it's at.
Yeah.
Anybody who's good at basketball either lives in the United States and is an American or comes to the United States to play. You can't lose when you have, like, the top 50 players on the planet. You know, like, 40 of the top 50 players.
Yeah, like, probably, like, 90 out of the top 100. So.
Yeah, so it's like you have, like, basically all the best players with a few exceptions. Like, who's the best international player right now?
Right now?
Like, the only really good international player I can think of right now is Dirk, and Dirk's pretty old.
Dirk's on the downhill slide. You have Pau Gasol is still good.
I guess the Gasol brothers, but they're also getting kind of old.
Well, Marc Gasol isn't really. Marc Gasol is probably the best international, but he wasn't at the games because of an injury. But, yeah, so he's there. Tony Parker's pretty good. You got Nicolas Batum. Pretty good, and he's from France. There are some good basketball players.
Yeah.
But you know which team didn't have any?
Like?
Serbia.
Serbia doesn't have any NBA players?
I think they have one, but he doesn't play that much.
Oh, man.
He's Bogdanovic, and I think it's the one that's on the Nets.
Yeah, not the one who's playing good. Yeah. Is he the one on the Raptors?
No, there was one on the Spurs and one on the Nets. And I think the one that was on the Spurs, he did sign somewhere else. I don't remember where. But even that, like, he still wasn't a major contributor yet.
Yeah.
But he was also a rookie last year, even though he was, like, 27. But either way, the only player that they had that's on an NBA roster is Bogdanovic. And he's a bench warmer. And... And so if they were to lose to that team, can you imagine how embarrassing that would be?
That would be extremely, extremely embarrassing.
I mean, it was bad enough that we lost back in, what was it, 2004? Or 2000?
I think it was 2000, because it wasn't 2004 like the Redeem team or whatever. Was that 2008?
I felt like that was 2008, but...
Okay, so it might have been 2004 like in Athens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Sydney or Athens that Argentina won?
I can't remember.
I think it had to, I think it was Athens. Yeah. Pretty sure. Anyway, yeah, so I think that a lot less of this, yeah, we're going to play with these less. It's not that these teams are bad. They're just not up to the caliber of, you know, all the players that we have in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so I don't think we're going to see those close games as much.
Hopefully not.
Sure, it'll probably happen at one time or another, just because that's just how it works sometimes.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll be three games in a row where we win by 10 or less. Yeah. Including two games in a row that we win by 3.
Yeah.
To France and Serbia.
France isn't that bad. They've got some NBA players.
But they're not within 3 points of us.
No.
They're not.
No.
Maybe 15, but not 3.
Maybe 15. Dude, Australia's probably going to be pretty good.
Australia was probably the best team that they, that outside of us, as far as talent goes. Yeah. Obviously, they didn't.
And give them a few years, because they had, it's either Brandon Ingram, or was he from Australia, or was it Ben Simmons?
Ben Simmons. So, next time, you're going to have Ben Simmons, Patty Mills, Dante Exum, Bogut might still be playing.
There's Joe Ingles.
Joe Ingles might still be playing. He's solid.
He'll probably be on the team because he'll be one of the better ones, but he's a bench guy, even for the Australian team now.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to have a lot of good young players. And then also there's Thon Maker. It's another one. He's a rookie. Should be pretty good. So that's a team that will be able to compete a lot better than most countries.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, we have a new segment here for the show. Call it Critical Condition. Basically, along with being armchair champions, we're also going to be armchair doctors. Basically, we're going to take different teams, players, sometimes coaches, and their situation, and we're going to diagnose where they're at and if they're going to recover. You know, because a lot of these guys are in dire straits or critical condition, and they're in trouble. Their careers might be over, or they're really struggling.
Looking at this list, I'm interested to see your take on some of these.
I think most of these, I think, are on the way to recovery, but we'll get into this. So the first one is the New York Knicks. So recently they've been struggling. I mean, they haven't been the garbage dump that is the Philadelphia 76ers.
Sorry. I think you meant to say dumpster fire.
What did I say? Garbage fire?
The garbage dump or something. But no, it's worse than that is what I'm saying. It has been worse than that.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear the Knicks and you go like this. And and that's how it's been for a while, just because they just don't know how to compete at a high level for some reason.
Yeah. So the Knicks haven't been as bad as the 76ers, but they've still had their own struggles. I mean, they brought in Phil Jackson to be an executive, which I don't know how well that's going. I feel like he's more suited to be a coach. He's a bit of a control freak.
Yeah, he is.
So the whole Knicks situation hasn't been great. They did make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference semifinals, like back in 2012, which when I saw that was a lot more recent than I thought it would be.
Yeah,
but still, they haven't had the greatest seasons. When they went to the Eastern Conference semis, J.R. Smith was averaging 18 points per game, which that feels like a long time ago.
Well, I mean, J.R. Smith can turn it on, but...
Yeah, that was like the 1 year he did turn it on.
Well, I mean, while he was in New York, yeah.
Yeah, I guess in New York.
But, I mean, he kind of turned it on in the playoffs for the Cavs.
Yeah, he was doing good.
He helped them out greatly. Before we get too much more into the Knicks, I do want to mention, though, with your comment about Phil Jackson, you know, the funny thing was he was trying to hire Steve Kerr, if you remember that. I don't know if you did. But I think his whole idea was partly that he wanted to be the coach, but just for home games. He didn't want to travel. And so he wanted to hire someone that would coach the away games, and he would coach the home games.
Really? Oh, my gosh. That just...
So, yeah, control freak to the highest level.
Yeah, I'm sorry. They did bring in Jeff Hornacek, which I still love Jeff Hornacek. To me, he's always going to be a Jazz man, even if he was affiliated with the Suns for about as long.
Yeah.
Maybe longer, I don't know.
Well, I mean, like, when was he the most relevant? When he was in the finals with the Jazz.
Yeah, of course.
So, but I mean, then he went and coached for the Suns, so that kind of cements his connection with them a little bit more.
Yeah. So I kind of feel bad for Hornacek because he's going to be going to the Knicks and is going to be the pawn, or I don't know whether he wants to be or not, but he's basically going to be the pawn of Phil Jackson until he gets fed up with it. But the thing is with the Knicks is they've brought in a lot of different players.
Yeah, they did.
And so you can either see this as applying a million Band-Aids or actually, you know, going in and doing surgery and trying to fix the problem. So you look at some of the players they've added. Derrick Rose was the main acquisition they made. They also signed Joakim Noah, so they're really going after the Bulls, apparently.
I mean, the Bulls weren't going to re-sign those two.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, obviously, I mean, they traded Derrick Rose.
Yeah, but Derrick Rose is not the future in Chicago.
No. At one point he was, but not anymore, for sure.
And I feel really bad because I like Derrick Rose, and I really wish he hadn't torn his ACL 1,000 times. Because I really liked him, and I liked how...
Yeah, I mean, he plays the style of play that demands a lot of athleticism and demands you to be able to take a lot of contact as you're going to the rim.
Yeah.
And when your body breaks down frequently, that's not going to work.
Yeah.
And so it'll be interesting to see if he's able to adapt and change kind of what he does to be more of a... Kind of like how Vince Carter adjusted his game, because obviously, you know, Vince Carter was a high flyer, but he adjusted to be more of like a perimeter player where he would like shoot a lot more.
And it extended his career forever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think he's retired yet. Yeah. He was playing last year. I don't think he retired this offseason.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and that's the thing. Like, Derrick Rose, and this is a struggle for lots of athletes that they have injury problems, and then they try to be as athletic and play the same style as they did before they were injured, and they're just not physically able to. And the only way you can survive is if you adapt.
Yeah.
And some guys are better at adapting than others. Mm-hmm. And some adapt before they get injured, and that works out better. But
yeah, Tim Duncan's a guy who was able to adapt. He didn't necessarily go through a bunch of injuries, but as he got older, he adapted his game, you know, Mr. Fundamental. His career lasted like 20 years.
Yeah.
But anyway, so along with those guys, the Knicks also, they got Courtney Lee and Brandon Jennings, a couple of more low-key signings. I actually wanted the Jazz to sign Courtney Lee, but mainly because of his defensive ability.
Yeah, but the Jazz are already pretty set at that position.
Yeah. So what do you think? Do you think, I've seen people go as far as saying the Knicks are going to the Eastern Conference Finals. I've seen guys say they're the biggest, you know, rival to the Cavaliers to go to the NBA Finals, and I don't know, I'm just not buying it, personally.
I'm definitely not buying it.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny when Derrick Rose had, what was the word? I guess, well, basically, he compared the Knicks to the Warriors and said that they were another super team.
I'm comparing the Knicks in a not as bad way to the Nets, who tried to sign a bunch of veterans.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying they're going to be as bad, because they have better players, but they're signing a handful of washed-up, kind of over-the-hill guys.
I do think that the Knicks will be better than they were last year. They're not really improving as much as they want to.
Yeah.
I don't think that they're going to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's possible, but either way, they're going to get destroyed by Cleveland.
Yeah.
If they do, but I mean, Carmelo Anthony, like as I mentioned earlier, kind of only plays one way. You got Derrick Rose, who's injury prone, probably won't even play half the season. Yeah. You got Joakim Noah, who is another guy that has had recent injury troubles. He might be injured for a good portion of the season. Courtney Lee is a solid player, but is that really who you want as your starter?
Yeah, no.
He's a great guy to come off the bench. But he's probably going to be their starter, and he's not really a starter in my mind. Yeah. They do have Porzingis, who did a great job last year, was really good. So I expect him to still be pretty good next year. But I just feel like the Knicks have always had this problem. Well, maybe not always, but for the last 10, 15, maybe 20 years, they had this problem of signing guys who are past their prime and paying them as if they were still in their prime. Like, they do this all the time. They did it with Amari Stoudemire, was a good example. They signed him for a ton of money as he was on his, like, the decline. And they've done the same thing with Joakim Noah. Derrick Rose, they traded, gave up a bunch for him. Yeah. He's in the same situation.
Yeah, and the thing is, Derrick Rose, I mean, I looked at his numbers. He had, like, I think 19 points per game last season. But the thing is, he's not efficient. And it's kind of those points that, I don't know, they're not helping your team as much as you think they are. Kind of like when Al Jefferson was with the Jazz. Yeah, he scored almost 20 points per game, but that wasn't helping the team as much as 20 points would suggest. And so I think that this is just going to be a team that, if they're lucky, they'll be middle of the playoff, like middle of the playoff hunt, like 5, 6, maybe 7. And that's if some of their guys stay healthy and they don't go through some major dysfunctions with injuries, chemistry, the front office. You know, somebody fires Jeff Hornacek because he's not, you know,
not playing ball.
And his team's not 10 games above 500. You know,
the problem with the Knicks organization as a whole, it's really the man, like the ownership, like, and what they think. Because the thing that's kind of a negative for being in New York, obviously there's lots of positives of being in that market, the biggest market in the country, maybe the world, if you really think about it.
Yeah.
The problem with it, though, is, like, people expect you to be good year in, year out. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have the pieces, like, you scramble to get what you can to try to be something relevant, rather than actually doing a rebuild.
Yeah.
And maybe, like, targeting some guys that aren't necessarily going to be the best right now. It's like, you look at the Jazz a couple years ago, you know, they lost a lot of games.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up getting the third pick and got Ennis cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on they got, it was Dante Exum.
Yep.
Was the main one. Like, so the year before they drafted Exum, they were awful.
Yes, yes, they were.
But they had lots of good young players who have now developed into a team that, you know, arguably is one of the top four teams in the Western Conference. Maybe the NBA. Because, I mean, there's really one team that, from the East at this point, that you really worry about if you're a Western Conference team. I mean, the Raptors are up there, too. They're pretty good, but they're just, like, not quite the same level.
Yeah, the Jazz might be somewhere around the same level as the Raptors at this point, maybe a little above, I think.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, they had all these young players, and they continue to develop them.
Mm-hmm.
They went through a year of, yeah, we're pretty terrible. And since then, like, they've cranked it up, and they've been pretty good.
Yeah, they just been going kind of the uphills, like, slowly developing and getting better.
But the thing is, like, the Knicks, like, they can't accept having a season like that. So they scramble to sign these players that used to be good, and they're not anymore. And so they end up being in the same position every year, but they're not getting new talent that's young that can develop and be better.
Yeah.
And that's where the Knicks run into trouble. And so this is another one of those times where they're scrambling to try to make a really good team, but they're going to be disappointed in the end because they spent their money on guys who are has-beens.
Yeah.
They might still be decent players, but they're not really going to be what you're paying them to be.
Yeah.
And then you don't have flexibility to sign other, like, players that could actually come in and contribute.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the next patient coming in here. So I guess we decided the Knicks aren't going to recover anytime soon, at least.
Not fully.
Yeah, not fully. There's always still going to be something.
They're going to have a lingering cough for a while now.
Lingering cough. All right, so the next one is Jadeveon Clowney. So this is a guy who came into the NFL. He's like 6'6", 270 pounds almost, and ran almost a 4.5. This is a guy who is an athletic freak. His first year, like, tore his ACL, was out for the season. Next season, played in, like, was it 13 games? And he's totaled in the NFL 47 tackles, 4.5 sacks. Not quite the Jadeveon Clowney we saw at South Carolina.
Yeah.
And so the question is, so far he's looked good in the preseason. He had a really good preseason game. this last preseason game, he was being disruptive, being the Clowney we've all been hoping for. What do you think the chances of him actually bouncing back are?
I'd say they're pretty good. He's still really young. When you tear your ACL, the next year for most guys, you're not going to be as good. But with another year removed from that, he has a chance to get back to kind of his form of before. Some people are freaks and just, they doesn't matter. Like Adrian Peterson goes out and runs for a billion yards. But for the most part, guys, like with from that injury, it's hard to recover quickly. And I think last year he was still, you know, overcoming, you know, the results of that ACL tear. And so I think that it's too early to say that he's done. He obviously has to do some work to get up to meet his potential. And, you know, there is a possibility that he is like, I think Ben Simmons is, like, where just kind of expect everything to be given to him and that it's just going to work out without working. And I think maybe he thought that's how it was going to go last year and it realized it wasn't. But the good thing for him is his teammate is J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
Who is just...
He takes up a lot of attention.
Yeah, he does. And also, on top of that, he, as a teammate, is a great example of hard work.
Yeah.
Because he works harder than anybody. And so for Jadeveon Clowney to see him and say, okay, I see how hard he's working. I see how good he is. I can be something like that. And if I just work hard, and he like sees the work that's being put in and realize, you know, I'm going to have to work hard if I want to be good like J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
And so I think that he'll see that, and I think that he'll figure it out. I don't know that he'll immediately this year be like up to the level that you'd hope, but I think we will see an upward trend.
Yeah. I think J.J. Watt being a good example, because he pretty much is the best defensive lineman in the NFL.
It's not pretty much. He is.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it is a really good example, and being a hard worker, that'll definitely help.
Yeah.
And I do agree that he probably is on an upward trend. I hope he is. Obviously, as you know, a Patriots fan, the Houston Texans are a rival team. I'd rather not see them beat the Patriots, but...
I really see them as a rival team for the Patriots, well, because they don't play in the same division, and they don't really have a history.
Well, they'll end up in the playoffs at some point. It's
Could be. They might be in the playoffs, but I don't know that I'd put them as a rival for the Patriots.
They were a few years ago, but for like two seasons. But I do want to see Jadeveon Clowney succeed. I remember watching that hit he made live against Michigan.
I don't remember.
I think it was Michigan. I remember watching that hit, and that was when I first learned who he was. So it's like, holy cow. But anyway, so... Yeah, I do think that he'll eventually come back. Hopefully he doesn't tear his ACL again if he can't adapt like we were talking about earlier. As long as he can adapt, then he'll recover. All right, so the third one, we do this one really quick because I want to talk a little bit about the Olympics. It's Chip Kelly. So Chip Kelly got shipped out of Philadelphia. And he had a record of like 26-21, which is not bad. It's better than a number of guys.
But he
got shipped out, I guess, largely because the front office just didn't like him, and they didn't like some of the decisions he was making.
Yeah. So Chip Kelly, I think, does a great job as a coach. I don't think he does a great job as a general manager, and he wants to be able to do both, because he wants to be able to decide who's coming onto his team. And for me, like, he did make a bunch of questionable decisions, such as trading away LeSean McCoy, who has the all-time rushing leader for the Eagles. He's a great player. He fits that system.
Yeah.
But Chip Kelly traded him away and ended up signing DeMarco Murray and Ryan Matthews. Yeah. Matthews, who didn't really ever, you know,
I don't know if he's
reach his expectations.
Yeah, and he's never really been healthy either. So
yeah. DeMarco Murray doesn't fit that system.
Yeah, not at all.
Good running back, but he's a downhill runner, one cut back maybe. But he goes up down the field. Whereas Chip Kelly's offense requires running backs to be side to side.
Yeah.
As well.
Which is basically what LeSean McCoy is.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was just a dumb decision by Chip Kelly to say, yeah, we're going to trade you away.
Yeah.
For Kiko Alonso, who hasn't done anything for them, really. But anyway, trade him to just ridiculous. I have a hard time not laughing at it.
Yeah, then, you know, they let DeShaun Jackson, well, they cut DeShaun Jackson. I mean, he wasn't, I don't think he was in his prime anymore, but he still had good seasons.
I would say he's probably still in his prime. He's still a really good athlete. And they cut him. They just did a lot of things. They let a lot of guys go. And really, basically, the amount of talent that was on that roster declined significantly in the time that Chip Kelly was there. And that's why he got fired, because of all his general manager stuff. On the field, he did a pretty decent job. Yeah. With less and less talent, he still was having some success. Yeah. But he wanted guys... Unfortunately, this is the major problem with Chip Kelly. And if he can adjust it, I think that he'll be okay. But his biggest problem is that he wants to be an overlord, kind of like you can be on like the college level,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, everyone has to listen to you, and or they don't get a play, or you can cut them or whatever. But that doesn't really work as well in the NFL, because like these guys are getting paid more than you.
Yeah.
And they're adults. Like, I mean, they're grown men. I mean, obviously guys who are playing in college are adults as well, but they're still...
Yeah, they're like 18, 19, 20.
Yeah, so technically they're adults, but at the same time, they're not like guys with children most of the time.
Yeah, this is like a 5, sometimes a 10-year difference as far as age and maturity.
Yeah.
And experience and things like that.
Yeah.
These are guys that actually know how to play the game by this point.
Yeah. And for me, that was the biggest issue with Chip Kelly, is he wants to be, like, controlling over everything. He wants everyone to just do what he says. And that he ran into some trouble with that with some guys in Philadelphia, because they're like, look, I mean, like, I'll play for you and stuff, but I don't want you to act like I'm a child.
Yeah.
And he got rid of the guys that kind of voiced their concern, from what I understand.
Yeah.
And on top of that, the general manager decisions, a lot of that was predicated upon, you know, those conflicts. Yeah.
Who was conforming?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you want the best example in my mind of the general manager coach is Bill Belichick. Yeah. And also just the culture that he's created. I don't think he's necessarily an overlord. Yeah, he does, you know, he's a little more harsh in some cases as far as off the field things. But I'm pretty sure he treats everybody like they're adults for the most part. And
yeah.
Coaches them. He makes good general manager decisions.
Oh, great general manager decisions. And he makes it's frustrating.
Yeah. That's great for me.
As someone that really does not like the Patriots, it is frustrating how good he is at doing that.
Yeah. And so he's somebody who's figured it out. He knows how to, you know, make it in the NFL. And hopefully Chip Kelly can figure that out too. Hopefully he'll figure it out in San Francisco.
Yeah, and the funny thing about it is, you know, San Francisco just had the same kind of coach in Jim Harbaugh, because that's how he is. He had the same thing where he wanted to be like a college coach with adults, with professionals. And really, it rubbed people the wrong way a lot. He lasted 4 years there, and he had great success. Really made the 49ers a team to be reckoned with every year. And obviously last year, after he was gone, they did terrible. They were just awful. They got bombarded with retirements and guys leaving the team, so they really had a lack of talent. But also, you know, it showed how good of a coach Jim Harbaugh was, regardless of how he, you know, how well he interacted with the players, per se.
Yeah.
I know a lot of guys were fed up with the same kind of a thing, but then they bring in Chip Kelly, who's a similar coach in that he wants to run things like a college program where it doesn't work like that. And so it'll be interesting to see if Chip Kelly can adapt and, you know, be a little bit more like NFL coaches in the sense that he's got to understand that these guys aren't college kids.
Yeah.
He can't just play overlord the same way. I mean, he could play overlord kind of like Bill Belichick does.
Yeah.
And have some success, but he's got to be smarter with his general manager decisions and all that. And if he can do those things, I think he'll be able to have a lot of success, because he's a good coach. But it's just a matter of him adapting, because the game is a little bit different at the NFL level.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of, you know, who's playing and, you know, how things work. And he wants it to be like college, and it's not. And I think that's why Pete Carroll struggled the first time he came to the NFL. He wasn't as bad as he's made out to be, but he didn't have as much success the first time because, and I think the same thing with Bill Belichick. Didn't he come from a college program when he first came into the league?
I don't remember where he came from because I know he was with, like, the Browns. I think he was with the Jets or Giants, maybe. He was with a couple teams before he went to the NFL, but I don't know if he did anything in college.
Yeah, I don't know. But either way, it's like, for some guys, your first stint doesn't go as well as you hope, and that's just because coaching, being a head coach in the NFL, is different than you'd expect.
Yeah.
And that's really, to me, what it was for a lot of these guys. Pete Carroll ended up washing out of the NFL. Nick Saban's another example.
And he hasn't made it back. I don't think he wants to
either. He doesn't want to because he's in a fantastic spot. He can have the top talent every year playing for him at Alabama and win national championships, where it's much harder to do that at the NFL level. And plus, like, he's been there for a while now, and so he's kind of set up roots, and there's no reason for him to want to leave because he's got the top program in the country. Like, maybe they don't win every game every year, but they're up there in the conversation every year. But anyway, so I think Chip Kelly has a chance. It all depends on him and how he adapts. But I think that, you know, he's not terminally ill at this point.
Yeah, I do think that he can make it if he can figure out the NFL, which I'm not sure he can, though. I'm a little doubtful, but I hope he does because I do like Chip Kelly. But anyway, moving on to, you know, the Olympics. They just closed Sunday. I guess we talked a little bit about Team USA. But I know the one big story was Ryan Lochte.
Ryan Lochte.
Yeah, his lie basically is exaggeration, which essentially became a lie because of it. Because they technically were, I guess, kind of held up at gunpoint, sort of. But it was because they broke something.
Yeah.
And so it was their fault, and they had to pay for it. And so
they were drunk, and they vandalized the gas station bathroom, and from the report I saw, like, the security guard didn't hold a gun on them.
Yeah, they just happened to have guns.
He had a gun because he's a security officer. Yeah, but
it's not like he was.
It's not like he was pointing at them and saying, "Give me your money."
Yeah,
it's just like they were breaking the law and they got in trouble for it. And I talked about this on the bullpen last week that I think that it started out as just like, you know, a funny joke that he told his family, and his mom took it as serious and decided to spread it everywhere. And so he's like, "Oh crap! Well, now I have to back her up." And then it turns out that it was a lie. It's just a bad situation.
When I first heard the story, I wanted it to be true, and I didn't want Lochte to turn out to be a liar, but then it was. It's kind of like when, guys who take steroids, I want them to be innocent, and I want them to, you know, not be lying criminals and stuff like that. Like when Aaron Hernandez was, you know, being accused with murders, you know, I want them to be innocent, and then they turn out to not be, and it's just like, oh, come on, guys. Why? Why? Why would you do this?
Por qué? So, yeah, I don't know why they do it, but they do.
Yeah, I guess money makes them stupid.
I think it's just that they're... I don't think it's about the money. I think that that's just kind of... You know, some people, they make mistakes. Some people, I think, kind of... know they want to do stuff like that. And they think they'll get away with it because of the money, but I don't think they do it because they have money.
Yeah. It's just they feel like with their status, they've kind of gotten above the rules, I guess, in some cases. Yeah. It's so frustrating. But anyway, moving past ridiculous. That, because the Olympics were still nice, I guess a couple of things. Do you have any favorite events or favorite storylines, looking back?
My very favorite storyline was that, we got the most medals like ever.
Really?
Well, at least for the last little while. And I thought that we set the record with Beijing. I think that we've got the most ever, but either way, we got a lot of medals.
This was one of those years where usually U.S. is like kind of neck and neck with whoever's maybe the host country, like in Canada, the Winter Games.
Winter Games, totally different animal.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Summer Games, the main threat that we've had has been China.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember back in Beijing, it was a battle down to the end. Mm-hmm. We still won, but...
Yeah, because we're America.
America!
So...
Hold on. Ready, ready?
America.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Try it again.
America.
All right.
There we go. yeah, but, one thing that I noticed when I was watching the Olympics, because I'd be watching the events, and then I'd watch something like volleyball. We had the men's team, the women's team, or even beach volleyball, or even water polo. I tend to be more engaged when it's a team sport. I kind of figured that out about myself, that I get more tense and involved in it, you know, instead of like a 30-second sprint. And not that I'm knocking any of the other events, because I still enjoy watching them, and it's really nice to get a chance to do that, you know, every 4 years to watch these these sprints, long jump, high jump, and just watch these crazy feats of athleticism. You know, these guys that basically can jump over Yao Ming and Manute Bol, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. I like pretty much every event, most events in the Olympics. I love watching the swimming because it's super exciting, like down to the wire most of the time. Unless, of course, you know, we have Katie Ledecky swimming the 800 meter freestyle, and then she finishes half a lap before everyone else.
Yeah.
But I like watching the team sports as well. I watched the basketball final, at least part of it. I was also playing something on Xbox at the same time, so I didn't fully watch it after a while, but it was fun for like the first half when I watched it.
Yeah.
And I was glad that we finally decided to pull our heads out of our butts and play like we're capable of, and take like a 30-point lead into halftime. And I was like, finally. Yeah,
finally, you're actually doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Right?
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that was good. I didn't get a chance to see the soccer final, but I did see the shootout, Neymar.
Yeah, I got to watch that live. I can't remember if I was at a restaurant or if I was watching it at home.
But it was awesome, though, with Brazil able to finally win a gold medal in the Olympics. They'd never done it before, which is crazy to me. Because it's Brazil, they're always winning. They've got lots of World Cups, just not Olympics.
Yeah, they kind of redeemed themselves a little bit by beating Germany.
Yeah.
I don't know if that redeems them from like a 7-1 loss. But.
Well, I mean, at the same time, something we talked about yesterday on Olé Utah State, as Sean is walking by, I was on the show with yesterday. We were talking about it that, they aren't really the same teams as a World Cup game because there's like regulations, like everyone has to be under 23 except for like 3 players, and so it's not the same team. But I bet for the Brazilian people to see them beat Germany for the gold medal must have felt good, because 2 years ago in the World Cup in Brazil they just got hammered by Germany.
They got embarrassed.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I want to mention, so never watched the Olympics, see Ashton Eaton. People always talk about the best athlete in the world. You know, they bring up LeBron James. I will contend it is Ashton Eaton, because he is a better athlete than LeBron James and most NBA players. I would say so.
Nope. Not a chance. He is a very good athlete. I'm not saying that he isn't. Obviously, to be able to be good enough in that many different categories to win gold in the decathlon is amazing. But to me, if LeBron James could do all those events...
Yeah.
He'd have to train for it, obviously. He couldn't just be like Tebow and think that he's going to go and just be really good at it right away. But LeBron is freakishly fast. He's super strong.
Yeah.
You've seen how athletic he is. And, I mean, people say, or there's that argument for people that, you know, the decathlon winner is the best athlete in the world. But that's not true in my mind. Just because they're the ones that are doing it doesn't mean that they're the best athlete. There's the guys in the NBA and the NFL are so freakishly athletic. If they applied themselves to like those from the get-go, like I would say that they would be setting world records, some of them.
Yeah.
Not everyone, obviously. But with LeBron James, he's just a freak in every way.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I have no doubt that if LeBron James trained for a decathlon, he could win. Because he's, like I said, super strong, super fast, like... It's insane how fast he is for a guy who's 6'9" and 260 pounds. He's super fast. And you just look at all the
Well, I think it's debatable because I think Ashton is probably faster because he runs like a 10-something 100-yard dash, which I'd imagine is faster than LeBron James. He's a better distance runner. He can probably jump about as high.
No, I doubt that. I doubt he can jump as high.
That's debatable. We'll have to see.
There's no way we're going to find out for sure.
Yeah, obviously. We're not going to do any verticals and stuff.
But. I have a hard time just saying just because the guy won the decathlon. Best decathlon person in the world at this point in time.
Yeah.
4 years could change.
He's going to get older.
Yeah. And so then there's going to be someone to replace him and everything. He didn't set the world record this time. So you can't say he's the best of all time on this one. But I think he set it 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So you could say he wasn't that point. But at the same time, like, just because an athlete is in a different sport, that doesn't make, you know, one athlete superior to another one.
Yeah.
Because you don't know. I mean, you have to be really, really athletic to be able to do what LeBron can do with on the basketball court. And as our station manager Mikey texted in, he said that, you know, LeBron airballs free throws, which I don't think I've ever seen him do that. I'm not contesting it's never happened. But I don't think it doesn't happen frequently. Yeah. But he says that's his reasoning for why he wouldn't do some Olympic events well. And maybe he doesn't. But I can't say that he's not as good of an athlete as Ashton Eaton. Ashton Eaton, amazing athlete. It was super awesome to watch him and the events that I saw him do. And it was super exciting to see him win the decathlon.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not ready to say that he's a better athlete than LeBron James.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to disagree on that, but that's a debate that'll just have to rage on because there isn't a reasonable way to solve it, I guess. You just kind of have to debate about it.
Yeah, I mean, you can debate it until you're blue in the face, but
yeah,
it's not really going to change people's minds, I don't think.
No. Debates usually don't change anybody's mind.
Sometimes. Most of the time, you're right. It depends on if you're changing the person's mind who's debating with you or the people who are listening.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
People who are listening may not have as set of an opinion, and they'll be like, oh, okay, well, you make some good points. But the person you're debating against, probably not, because they're like, I'm right, I know it.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at. Oh, there's the bell.
Oh, man.
We're out of time. We actually should have been out of time about 5 minutes ago, but we had to talk about Ashton Eaton. But anyway, I want to thank you guys for listening to Armchair Champions. It was fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Next week is going to be crazy. I think this show might be moved to Mondays, but it's TBD at this point.
Yeah, we're still working on it because class schedules, things like that.
Yeah. So that's going to be fun next week. But hopefully we'll have sports going each day of the week next week. But if not, it will be the next week should be, for sure, like, have things every day. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But we want to thank you guys for listening to Armchair Champions here on Aggie Radio, KBLU 92.3, Logan, Utah.